From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat. It's Idaho Matters. A deadly virus is spreading out of Tanzania and Equatorial Guinea. It's a form of hemorrhagic fever, and it has no cure. So how concerned should we be here in Idaho? We're also going to answer your questions today about shingles and COVID-19. And if you have a public health question, send us an email at idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Joining us today, Dr. David Pate. He's the former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Welcome back, Dr. Pate.
Thank you, Samantha.
What is this Marburg virus? I've been reading several things, and none of them look very cheerful.
Yeah, this would not be something you'd want to get. Marburg virus is a member of a family of viruses that is related to Ebola, which is probably something that the listeners are more familiar with or have at least heard of. Marburg virus is what we call a hemorrhagic virus. In other words, when people get infected with it, typically what happens is they will all of a sudden develop a high fever, a severe headache, and then over the next 5 days or so, they will begin to have excessive bleeding. This can be from their gums, from their nose. They throw up frequently with this illness, and they can throw up blood. They commonly have diarrhea with this, and they can have blood in their stool. This virus, though, is transmitted in a very different way than the coronavirus that we've talked about or influenza virus. It's not a respiratory virus. This virus is transmitted through close contact, and any of the fluids, any secretions, any fluids can lead to transmission of this disease. And as you mentioned, it has a high, what we call case fatality rate. So if we recognize that there's a case of it, what percentage of those people die with a diagnosis? It is as high as 88 to 90%. So we have had outbreaks before. However, there are two outbreaks right now. We're not 100% certain that they couldn't possibly be related, but we haven't established a link between them two. And this would be the first time we've had two simultaneous outbreaks of it. In the first one that happened in Equatorial Guinea, which is, if you think about the map of Africa, it would be on the coast on the left-hand side in the middle. So it's along the southern Atlantic Ocean. And in that state, and the World Health Organization has already called them out that they don't think all the cases are being reported, but the initial reports of 29 cases, 27 of those have already died. We're talking about something far different than what our experience has been with COVID. Then what got concerning is the second outbreak, which it was in Tanzania, which now, again, looking at that map, I've just told you where Equatorial Guinea is, now move over to the opposite side of the country, to the Indian Ocean side, and it's a coastal state. And there's about four states or so in between the two. And so, yes, it could possibly be that that was started through travel or something, but what the concern is that we're not finding a lot of epidemiological links. In other words, we can't determine, okay, they got it from this person. So there is some concern that there might be so-called community spread, which we talked a lot about with COVID. Mm-hmm. And so that's the concern. Now, for us in Idaho, this isn't keeping me awake, and it certainly shouldn't keep you awake. Nevertheless, there are some people that should be concerned about this. If you do business, if you travel to Africa, then there are some precautions you need to take, and you need to rethink if you're expecting to just do something, you know, recreational and you want to go there. I'd hold off until there's actually several diseases that are in outbreaks right now. So I think this probably wouldn't be a good time for travel. Or if you have family there and expect people to travel here, we've got to be careful. We've got to have people observe for a while. This has a long incubation period, can be up to 21 days from the time you're infected till the time that disease manifests.
Wow. I think part of the scariness of this is that high fatality rate. And as I mentioned, I think in the intro, there's no cure for this. There are no vaccines. There's no antiviral treatments really that they have at the moment.
Well, all of that is true. One thing I would say is, however, is that we do have to take the fatality rate in consideration of where these people are being treated. They're being treated in countries, because those are where the outbreaks are, that don't have advanced healthcare systems like we do. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that we can be dismissive of this, but I think if there were someone that came to the United States with this disease, I think we would have a much better chance of successfully treating the person. What people with Marburg virus typically die of is they bleed out, essentially. They lose so much blood and fluids that they develop kidney failure, and they can no longer support their blood pressure and those kind of things. We're pretty good at treating those kinds of things. And so, for example, the case of Ebola that came to the United States and showed up at a Dallas hospital, a nurse got infected, we treated those people successfully. We've also had one other U.S. traveler that came back to the United States from Africa and had Marburg virus a number of years ago, and we successfully treated that person. Again, I'm not saying, okay, well, that means we don't have to worry about it. It's still a horrible, horrible disease. And believe me, you don't want to get this. This fatality rate would probably even meet the Idaho legislators' definition of what they think a pandemic would look like.
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. And you mentioned, I mean, this is not a new virus. There have been outbreaks off and on back to 1967, I think, is when it was identified. And I understand in some of the things I've read that they're working on some medications that might help if they can get them tested and figure out if they might actually do some good.
Yes, we first discovered this virus in 1967. There were actually three outbreaks back then. Two of them were in Germany, and one was in Marburg, which is where this virus gets its name. And another one was in Serbia, or that what was Serbia at the time. And so since then, there's been periodic outbreaks. This is another one of those newly emerging viruses that we have traced back to bats. And we believe that the intermediate host might be African green monkeys, but we're not certain. Mm. And so this is another one of those, what we'd call a spillover event or a zoonotic infection, a transmission from an animal to a human. And while we don't currently have approved treatments or vaccinations, there are some vaccinations in trials. And none of these are the mRNA vaccines, but they have been so far in early trials in animals showing good results. And the one thing that may be promising, I mentioned the long incubation period, that it could be up to 3 weeks. When you have a long incubation period, it does raise the potential that perhaps if we know someone's been exposed, that we could vaccinate them even after exposure, so-called post-exposure prophylaxis. And then there are some early studies in animals that show that that could help either prevent the person from coming down with the Marburg virus disease, or at least make the illness not quite so severe.
Mm. So quickly before we go to questions, is this outbreak scarier than past outbreaks, or are we just paying more attention to viruses thanks to COVID?
Well, you know, I don't think we've been paying enough attention to viruses. Frankly, there's so many viruses that emerge in other countries that we just blow off because we're thinking, it's not a threat to the United States. Well, I think we have to change our thinking, especially after we've seen what's happened with COVID, because we're such an interconnected world now. Trade, travel, viruses, even if they're things that occur in Africa, they can make their way here. And in fact, all we have to do is look back to monkeypox as a recent example. That used to be an illness like Marburg that was typically just outbreaks in Africa. Well, here it is. So I do think that we need to take more action to investigate, try to contain these outbreaks, and do studies and learn about these viruses because they help us in the future. But in this instance, this outbreak is notable because, first of all, as I said, we've never had two outbreaks at the same time. So this is a little concerning. Mm-hmm. The second is that even though we think they're underreporting cases, these two outbreaks are already the fourth and sixth largest outbreaks we've ever had of this virus. So I certainly don't put this on the high list of things that I'm worried about that could become pandemics. I don't think this one would. There's other viruses I'm much more concerned about. But this is a virus that we need to learn about because there's a lot of other hemorrhagic fevers and caused by viruses that are transmitting. And we do need to learn more about them, develop treatments, develop vaccines, et cetera.
All right. Good to know. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. We do have a couple of questions from listeners this week. We had a Boise listener who wrote, "I got a shingles shot in January and my arm still aches. I'm supposed to have a second shot in the next few months and I'm reluctant to get it since I'm still aching from the first shot. Should I get the shot or am I protected with just the one shot?"
Yeah, so for listeners, shingles is an illness people can get. It's dreadful. It is related to us getting chicken pox when we were younger, and then that virus laying dormant and not causing any harm that we know of until people get older, and then we start losing a lot of the effectiveness of our immune systems, which allows this virus to now pop back up. And how it manifests is typically as a rash that's very painful and occurs in one distribution in the body. There are some cases where shingles can occur that are actually quite serious, and that can be when the outbreak is in the nerve around the ear or the nerves around the eyes. Those can cause really serious problems. But mostly it's a condition that is just horribly painful and a nuisance for a few weeks to months. Some people have continuing pain for months or years after the shingles, but that's why we've got these vaccines. So this listener is talking about the Shingrix vaccine. This is a recombinant vaccine. It's a newer vaccine. It's more effective. And it's a two-shot series. So he got one shot and he's asking how protected he might be. The technical answer is we don't know because the studies weren't designed to answer that question. It was always tested as a two-shot series. If we go back to those studies and we try to make an educated guess, then it depends on age. If this listener is 50 or 60 years old, that one shot alone is perhaps as high as about 90% effective in preventing him from getting shingles. However, if he's over 70, Now we're talking about it may getting the one shot may be something around maybe 60% effective. So certainly better than nothing. And if this side effect is really distressing to him, it sounds like it is, then, and especially if he's in that younger 50 to 60 group, then he might want to just talk with his doctor, see, it may not be the vaccine. Maybe when the vaccine was administered, they hit something else with the needle. I don't know. I'd have to evaluate him, but maybe talk with his doctor. And I think the good thing is he can wait for a while to see how this plays out. If this resolves eventually here, then I think he can start thinking about whether in light of how bad that was, does he want to take a chance on the shingles or would he want to go ahead with the second dose of vaccine? At this point, I'd say just that's good. You got the first one. Let's just kind of observe for a while, see what happens with this. Talk with your doctor.
Got it. Okay. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Sonny in Haley writes, I'm almost 75, in good health, still working. I had a fairly mild case of COVID last June. I've had all four COVID shots, including the bivalent vaccine last October. Is the updated vaccine I've heard about new and improved over the bivalent vaccine or the same thing? Sonny is leaving on a cross-country trip and wants to know, am I as vaccinated as I should be?
Well, Sonny, first of all, I think you ought to take a expert on coronavirus with you, so I'm ready to go. Virginia Beach sounds delightful. So let's answer your questions. The first thing, yes, they're the same thing. So the updated vaccine is the bivalent booster. So you've done everything you're supposed to. Number two, stay tuned. It may even be before you leave on your trip that we're expecting there will be approval for another dose of that bivalent booster. It could be just in the next couple of weeks. So right is about the time you're getting ready to leave. So stay tuned. You might want to get that right before you go. Last two things, be careful still around large gatherings, particularly indoors. We do have some new variants that seem to be a little bit more immune evasive, but we don't know that they're causing any more severe problems. But I did look up Virginia Beach. That disease transmission that we know of is roughly the same as it is right here in Boise. Hmm. And last thing is, if you want to go to my blog, I did a blog post on December 20th about things to think about when you're traveling, because you need to think about, well, what if I do get sick? What if I get symptoms? Where will I go to get testing? How will I get started on Paxlovid right away? What hospital would I go to, et cetera. So just kind of plan ahead, but good luck. It sounds like great fun, and do be listening to the show for an update about a new booster.
You got it. We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. Dr. Pate, thank you so much for your great information.
My pleasure, Samantha. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I have never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast in its latest series, Taking Cover.